Okay, we're in a new section. We're in chapter 35, which is a page 135, 136 in the bottom numbers. The next bunch of chapters talk about mitzvahs and the importance of doing mitzvahs. And as is with the other sections that begin in Tanya, he quotes back to the title page,
okay,
which states the purpose of the work of Tanya is to explain the verse Kikar v'alecha hadavar ma'od v'fichol v'avcha la'asoso.
It's easy.
Okay, how is it easy for you in your heart and your mouth to do it?
Okay.
And explained in chapters 1 through 17 how it's easy to do it one way, and 18 through 25 how it's easy to do it a different way. Mm-hmm. But their focus on the in 18 to 27, the focus is on the word ma'od. 18 to 25, the word on the mode means very.
Very.
We mean very.
Very.
Okay. 1 through 17 is the focus of it really is on kikarov. It's close to you.
Okay.
Now he's going to focus on the word lasoso. To do it. What do you mean do it? What's, you know, what are we doing? What is it that we're trying to accomplish?
Okay.
So he says, now latesis be our tavis lasoso. To understand the word lasoso. And why are there Beinonim? Wouldn't life be easier if everybody was a tzaddik? Wouldn't so much more get accomplished if, you know, the power of Birurim, since we are here, in order to rectify the world, wouldn't it be so much easier, so much more cost-effective if we were all tzaddikim?
Yes.
It would work so much easier that way.
Very.
But the answer is, well, we know that's not true because the world isn't tzaddikim. So we have to ask the question the other way around is, well, so it must mean that the most cost-effective way of doing things is to include Beinonim.
Yes.
So what do Beinonim do? What's the advantage of a Beinoni over a tzaddik?
Right. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, given the choice of being a tzaddik, being a Beinoni, what would the average Joe choose? Well, considering that he's average, I don't know. No one's ever asked me that question. Which would you rather be, a Beinoni or a tzaddik?
Okay, yeah, that.
You know, so
considering I don't know what either one is, I haven't given any thought
to that one, and haven't.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather be one of the. You know,
it's considering I don't know what either one is, and
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and considering that, Schoenberg Gordon said that the Rush of Atovla, which is talked about in chapter 11 of Tanya, at the beginning of chapter 11, who this person on occasion thinks a thing of doing something wrong. He says, such a person you could hand a kvittel to and ask for a pinyon. You know, so. And he's called a Russia.
He's called a Russia.
So, why? Because every once in a while, not even close times, he does think something occasionally wrong. So, what is it? If you read his Neshavs and Malayim, he's lavished. Why are we here in this world? The Gufim, Benafisha, Bahamas, and the animal soul, and Abadi, Shemaklipa, the Sitra Achra. It's another problem, okay? Let's say, you know, it's easier. If your job is here to clean things up, it'd be a whole lot easier if you weren't sunk into the schmutz.
If you were
standing outside of the mud, and instead we're told to clean up the mud, it might be a whole lot easier. To clean it up
above
your head. If you weren't treading in it.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yes. Since it is, and he spells it out, that we'll never be able to vanquish evil ever from our left ventricles. They'll always be there. And this guy's got a constant war going on. So that there shouldn't come these thoughts, and after that the speech and action from the depths of the animal soul to the brain to think about it and put it into terminology as he talked about before. Because with a Beinoni, the animal soul which is coming from Klippa is the same strength like the day he was born. So you see, you know, the person's told that what he's, one of the things he has to do in this world is that he has to make himself a better person. But if you were to analyze what did the person accomplish after 120 years, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of improvements that are made over 120 years.
No, surely not.
And of course, you could always use the line, and I use this line myself. And people say, you know, well, Hilton Finman, you've been from for 35 years, you're learning Hasidus for 35 years.
Yeah.
You know, are you a refined Edel Chassid? And my answer to them is, what would I have been had I not spent 35 years learning Hasidus?
Exactly. Yes.
So maybe just to keep the status quo where I was 35 years ago, that I'm not a bigger behemoth,
right.
I needed to be spending all that time with learning and davening and doing mitzvahs.
Just barely keeping the thing in check.
Correct. You know, it's just like, I feel like the kid with his hole in the dam
finger
over
in the
there.
Finger in the back, right, yeah. Exactly.
Rabbi Goldman.
Yes, I understand.
Okay, the only thing is that with a banani, so the thought, speech, and action is not manifest in the body.
Right.
Okay, so is that an accomplishment already? Yeah, I guess you could call it an accomplishment. It's not, he doesn't have any effect on the body whatsoever. I mean, on the animal soul. The animal soul is just as much an animal as he was when he was born, but he's got the thing chained up.
I talked
to her. Yeah. So if that be the case, why does the soul have to go through all of this to fight this wanton battle? To wage a war every single day with his Yetzirah. How many times is it that the snooze button goes off? And do I get up? Do I not get up?
And it's not like it doesn't
and
happen
it's every, single day.
Yeah, it's not like it doesn't happen every day.
Right, it's not like, you know, hey, today I got up really good. No, it's every single
just
day.
Just only every day, you know.
Right.
I'm not like that.
The only day I can wake up early is the day that I think, you know, I don't have anything I can sleep in today. The godly soul will never vanquish the animal soul. And not only that, we're not expected to vanquish the animal soul either. That's not what we're here for. So if that be the case then, so what are we doing?
Right. What's the whole point?
So it says, take heart. Be happy with Hashem. That Hashem is really pretty happy with what we're able to accomplish when we do Torah and Mitzvahs and our Avodas Hashem. You know, every time a person, you know, we have these animal souls, we're totally steeped in Klippa, we're living in an environment of Klippa, and every time a person says, you know, I'm going to do a mitzvah now. So we said already from before, chapter 33, 34, Hashem says, wow, this is all worthwhile.
Absolutely.
Wow, this is wonderful. And if a person's able to even control himself and not act like an animal for just like a minute.
For a second.
The greatness of Hashem is elevated to the highest of levels what a person's able to do simply by controlling himself.
Your daughter's in Australia?
No.
Mendel's in Australia.
Melbourne. And we can understand this by understanding the words of, this is going to go on now till like chapter 40, the words of the Yanuka. The Yanuka means an infant. Okay, which is a part of the Zohar, that there was this little kid who was somehow, I'm not exactly sure what the story was, I think he was born and the angel kind of missed him when he slapped him on the face coming out, so he missed him. Because the whole purpose is that we know the child is, the embryo is learning, especially what it says is the neshama is learning 9 months in the womb.
Right.
And then on the way down, the angel smacks him in the mouth.
Right.
And he forgets it all. So this was his kid that the angel missed.
Yeah, swung him.
Okay. So it happens every once in a while, I suppose, you know. So the kid just started spouting all this stuff. That's called the yanuka.
Uh-huh.
The yanuka meaning the infant.
Right.
As in, it appears as little interjections at the bottom of the page in the Zohar.
Uh-huh.
It says in Parshas Balak, Al Pasik Chacham Eina Barayshay.
They did a good job.
There's a verse that says a wise man's eyes are in his heart. Now we know that the Torah doesn't say anything in his head. Excuse me. The Torah doesn't say anything obvious. Nowhere does it say. Nowhere does it say that the sky is blue. Which right now this happens to be the sky is pink. But anyway, what it says. Okay, so the pasuk says the ki ban aser einay davar but the bar nash. Where else will you find a guy's eyes? We don't need a pasuk to tell me that a guy's eyes are in his head. You know, just like we don't need a pasuk to tell us this guy is blue. You just look, you see this guy's blue. Pasuk says, what do you expect a guy's eyes to be in his elbows? It's not that you've never met anybody whose eyes are in the on their elbows. So Allah, but because there is a pasuk that tells us a man's eyes are in his head, that means that it's talking about something else.
Must be something to be learned.
Elekra hachihu vade ditnan. But you need this pasuk. Why? Because we learn in a Mishnah. The layach barnash vigili deresha arba amos. It says that a person should not walk a distance of 4 cubits, about 6 feet, with his head uncovered. My time, why is that? The Shechinta Shari al Resha. Because the divine presence rests on the person's head. Okay, that's why we wear something called a yarmulke. Yarmulke. We talked about yarmulkes before? Okay. You know, Dave, why we wear yarmulkes? How we came up with such a thing? You know what the word yarmulke means?
Well, this reason doesn't sound like, it doesn't seem like a good explanation.
This is our explanation though, but
well, so the reason we cover our head is because the Shekhinah rests on our heads.
Yep.
Shekhinah rests on our head, and what does that have to do with the yarmulke?
Okay. The yarmulke came in as a concept during the Babylonian exile. The word yarmulke, which is Yiddish, is actually an Aramaic word, which when Nebuchadnezzar had all these Jews running around Babylon, so to distinguish who was Jewish, so slaves had to wear something called a yarmulke. Yarmulke means a fear of the king. It was a beanie head, beanie cover, so that people would know the guys with the beanies are the slaves. The rabbis adopted this and said, this is actually a good practice. We are going to wear yarmulkes, and we're not going to be afraid of Nebuchadnezzar, we'll be afraid of a bigger king, a greater king. We'll be afraid of the king of kings. Okay, so that's when the institution of the yarmulke came in. Okay, so, and it's to remind us constantly of the fact,
but it's an Ashkenazi thing,
that Hashem is right there, where? Right on top of you. And because of the yarmulke, there are things that people don't do, because people would say, this guy is a religious Jew. What's he doing with this thing on his head, doing what he's doing? So that's part of the idea. Right, I remember talking about yarmulke, the story that I was going to tell about the 3-year-old and their former rabbi asking him about the yarmulke. You remember that story?
No? I don't remember that one.
No? I have to go back and listen on it. This is a story Schoenberg Gordon would tell.
Okay.
About there was a rabbi, a reform rabbi, who, yeah, after he retired, became a religious Jew.
Uh-huh.
So he would come and talk to Schoenberg Gordon about Kabbalah and mysticism and, uh-huh, these things. He wrote a book about mysticism. So the first time he walked into Rabbi Gordon's house, Rabbi Gordon's daughter, who is now a shliach in Alabama, was 3 years old.
Yeah.
And she says to him, are you a Yid? And he says, yeah. She says, where's your yarmulke? And he said, the sky is my yarmulke. And she responded, such a big yarmulke for such a little head? So, anyway, so we wear the yarmulke as a reminder. Okay, so it says Chacham Ein of Bereisha, that the wise person's eyes are in their head, that they're constantly aware that the divine presence is right there. Because what's the definition of a truly God-fearing person? A God-fearing person is constantly aware of Hashem's presence. And how is it a show? Oh, yeah, I could say, oh, yeah, of course I'm aware of God's presence. Oh, sure. Okay. A person who, the statement which is going to come up very, very soon, from Yefin ben Zakkai, that he wished his students that they should have fear of God equal to their fear of man. And understanding what does that mean, that he explained, because when someone's looking, you never do anything wrong.
Yeah.
So you should know that Hashem is always looking. The connection that we have with Hashem is always there.
Yeah.
So that's what it means to be a truly God-fearing person. Okay?
Yeah. Who you are in secret is who you are.
Yep. Any person who's smart, his eyes are filling up his head, okay, so he knows that there are the He knows that what's above his head. V'tamen l'neidada ahuna hayre da adlik al reisha. And he understands that divine presence is like a light. And so there's a light which is flickering over his head. So now what happens is we have an analogy that we now are becoming like candles. Okay? Everything okay?
Yeah. Okay. Tiny, small pair slipped out of my neck.
Okay. The Yitzchak L'Mishacha began the goof for the Barnash. And what we have to do, what we want to do, is we want that flame to permeate the body. In other words, so now we're going to do an analogy that we are like candles. The flame...
Not really to my granddad passed away this weekend also. My father's father.
This is your story.
He passed away just Sunday.
Oh, I don't know. So your father's saying Shiva?
No, he chose to be cremated, didn't want to
say. Uh-huh, okay, sorry to hear it.
He took today and yesterday, but he's not doing any ceremony.
Or gotcha. Okay. Anyway.
Not to bring down your shirt.
Right. Anyway, Tamar Lanaida Dahu na Hira the Idlak al Rish Starhlim Shachab again to Gufa, Divar Nash. And what we want to do is we want to bring the divine presence into the person's persona. Ihu Pasil to the Nahira Idlak La Ela. So what is it? So the body is the wick. In the Nahira Al Adik La Ela Shama the Malkit Savava Imr Shaman al Reshach al Yachsir. And as we want the body to act now as a the candle, so it says, what does he need now? So he's got a flame. The flame is a divine presence. He's got a wick. What's the wick? The wick is his body. What does he need now? He needs oil. Okay. So Shlomo Melech says that there should be no lack of oil above your head. And what's the oil? What is that? What's the oil? The oil of the good deeds that a person does.
Yeah.
So the good things that you're doing with your body is drawing the divine presence down into this world. Mm-hmm. By way of analogy. Similarly, that's what it means that a wise man's eyes are in his head, that he should be able to see that what he's able to accomplish is able to indeed make the world a better place. And this is where the end of the quote is that we started before from the Yanuka. So, Hini Bir Mashal Zeh. Now we're going to analyze this example. Pardon?
We're just pushing. How did it answer why the when the verse says a man's eyes are in his head, it's coming
because
really
he should mean to see that he needs to see, what's a wise person? He needs to see that his actions are accomplishing things in this world on a plane which is visible to his own physical eyes. And he's going to explain that now at drawing plagues. Okay?
Not just he sees the physical, he sees the...
He sees what he's able to accomplish, yes. But making the world a better place. That's a smart person. So that which we said before, an example. Let's analyze it. We compare the light of the Shekhinah, the divine presence, to that of a candle. And the light of the candle can only stay in the candle, can only be on the wick, if you have oil wicking up through the wick, and it, thus by providing a vehicle for the flame to burn. So now what does it mean? The divine presence only rests on the person's body, which is compared to a wick, if the person is doing good deeds specifically. You want a relationship with Hashem? At this point, what we're talking about is doing it. This is the just do it chapter. Later, we'll get into the philosophy stuff. We start getting into chapters 41 through 47. There he talks, you know, philosophical stuff and things to be thinking about and kavanas and intentions. And now at 35, just do it.
Let's say, like the wise man understands somewhat the process of, it's like karma, like skarva aina. He could see, like, okay, and I'm not just doing a mitzvah, but I could actually see how that is working out.
Correct. The wise person is seeing that when he's putting on tefillin. He's not going to see the God only is coming into the world because he's putting on tefillin, because he's not a prophet. He's a wise man. But he understands that by him doing this mitzvah, even something which seems so superficial as putting on tefillin.
Was that prophecy, or that's just purely...
If you were to see the godliness, it would be prophecy. Understanding the godliness is called smart. We don't see... Do you see the godliness when you put on tefillin?
I think I do, right? I mean...
I'm going to sit there where you are, and you can teach me the class.
Yeah, I mean, not for tefillin, really.
Maybe that's what I'm talking about. A person puts on tefillin. Does he see godliness coming down into the world? No. Okay, but he understands about him putting on tefillin, so he's making the world a more refined place.
He understands, like he believes, or he understands?
No, you have to understand. No. Believe is not good enough. That's a starting point. I believe I'm doing this. Okay, so I'm doing it.
Like, I don't see, like,
you got to keep going. You got to keep going from there. Believing is not going to cut it, is what the Alter Rebbe wants to say. That's a start. A person has to understand. Understand means, like, you know, the same way you understand 2 and 2 is 4. You have to understand that putting on tefillin makes the world a godly place. He's not going to see it. 2 and 2 are 4s, you can see. You know, you take 2 of these and 2 of those and put them together, you see you got 4 things. So, but you can understand the concept behind it. So you have to understand that when putting on tefillin, we're making the world a better place. And he has to understand it to the point where he it's like a concrete entity to him. Yes. Okay. V'lo dai lo b'nishmasa shehu chelak elikam imali yeis hi kashemen l'pasil l'kam avoyer amuvin l'kol maskil. And it's not enough just to have a godly soul. Okay, let's do this for an analogy. Instead of the analogy of the good deeds being the wick, we'll have the relationship that we have with Hashem. We have a body, we have the Hashem, and the connection between the body and Hashem is a godly soul. That'll work. But he says, no, it's not enough. There's not enough power, there's not enough staying power. It would be too much of a flash, you might say, because what happens to the godly soul in the presence of godliness? You get none of an aviv going on over there. Okay, you get a flash and boom, out.
Yeah, you're out of here.
Okay, it's like using the, so it doesn't hold it.
Using the exit button.
Correct. Okay. So that's why in another example, when we have this example of a candle, so it says that if you're using an example of an oil candle, there's another thing that you need here. As part of the example, is you need the container for the oil.
That's right. Kaylee.
So the vessel for holding the oil is going to be the body. Mm. The wick is going to be the godly soul. Mm-hmm. The oil is going to be the good deeds. And the Shekhinah will be the flame. Mm-hmm. So in that analogy, you see you have to have the good deeds, because otherwise you just have a wick with no... it'll just burn up very quickly.
Yeah, no capacity.
With no oil.
Right.
There are 3 lines from the bottom now. Kihine nishmas ha'adam afilu hu tzadik gomer oivet Hashem b'yira v'ava v'taynugim. Any person, even if the person's a complete tzadik, and he's serving Hashem with a level of love of delights, which is viewed upon in Tanya as being the highest level, that a person has a deep, enraptured love, passionate love affair with God.
Afal Pikein.
And that's here is Afal Pikein, Aina Betelub Mitzias Lagamri Lifto Lichala Ba'ur. Hashem Mamish. He still says, I love God. Mm. As soon as a person says, I, he's already creating an interposition between him and Hashem. So it's not enough for the person to sit and to think and to meditate and to philosophize and to conclude as to what the relationship between the Jew and Hashem is. It's a very good thing. I recommend it all the time. 5 minutes a day in the morning before you daven. Sit and think, what is my relationship with Hashem? Okay, but it says that's not enough. That's not enough to hold it a whole day because you're missing the fuel.
Right.
There.
Right.
You've got the wick, but you have no fuel. You know, you're sitting. Is it a mitzvah to know Hashem? Yes, there's a mitzvah to know Hashem. Okay, Rambam counts it as one of the 248 positive commandments is to know Hashem. But it's not a mitzvah that involves the physical world. It involves our intellect. So it's not as good, but it's not bringing it down. Even though with the statement that from the Friedrich Rebbe, that what is the world missing is 5 minutes of concentration. And the story which he told, I think, last time, that the Friedrich Rebbe was very impressed when he saw in the monthly report from the head of the yeshiva that there was a certain yeshiva bacher who spent 5 minutes before davening every day thinking about Hasidus, and he was very, very happy with such a statement. He says, nonetheless, that's just a start.
Yeah.
Okay. Because even a tzaddik gomer, when he's talking about thinking how much he loves Hashem, yeah, it's I love Hashem.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with it. You can't get out of it. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't say not I. There's no such word.
Right.
What are you going to put as your predicate nominative if you suddenly disappear? If you're not there, then no one's loving Hashem.
Fact, indeed.
Okay. And a person can't say, is one of those things a person cannot say honestly, is I am Bethel. I don't exist. You can't do that.
That doesn't work.
Okay, because as soon as you say the word I,
you exist.
Okay.
In your own mind.
And it's furthermore emphasized in English more than in Hebrew, because in Hebrew there's no such thing as a capital letter, and in English I is always capitalized.
Yes.
Meaning I have importance. Intrinsically.
Yes.
I am the most important person I know.
Yes.
As he just said, he's his own thing, he's got his own soul, he's got his own body, and him and his fear of Hashem are two different things. It's two separate entities. There's him, and there's his love for Hashem. Masha'en kena mitzvahs amaisim tovim, which is not the case. When you're talking about doing mitzvahs, what does a person have to do a mitzvah? The first thing is they have to kind of like get out of the way.
Yeah, make up their mind.
They have to, no. They have to put themselves aside.
Put themselves aside, right.
Because there's a zillion things you could be doing besides this mitzvah.
Right, right.
And in order for a person to do a mitzvah, they have to say, I'm going to do what Hashem wants. Right. It's not me. At this point, it's not me that's important.
Right.
It's that the mitzvah be done. And we've talked about this before, that sure, when a person is doing a mitzvah, they lose their entity as themselves, and they become the mitzvah doer. We've talked about this before. Yes. These are the will of Hashem. V'ritzani yisbarach hu makar chayosim l'kol o'elam ha'isabriyim sh'yored aleihem al yedei tzimtzum imarabim v'hester ponim shal ratzon elyon baruch hu. Okay, because the mitzvahs come from the will of Hashem. But everything comes from the will of Hashem. Why did Hashem create the world? Bottom line.
He wanted to. He decided.
So that means that the world is an expression of the will of Hashem.
Right.
Why do we do mitzvahs? Because Hashem wants us to. So I tell you what, if we got this want, we'll just let Hashem keep on creating the world and I'll forget about doing the mitzvahs, because Hashem's doing what he wants anyway. He's making the world. That's enough. But no. Because what happens with the creation process to make a world is the godliness has to go through this whole long creation process, which according to the Kabbalah involves an infinite number of steps. That's the difference between the Rizal and the Moshe Cordovero as to how the creation occurs. We ever talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's one very fundamental difference. There are probably more, but I haven't learned enough Kabbalah to find the differences. But one of the very fundamental differences between Moshe Cordovero and the Rizal.
Tamar Devora.
No, Pardes. Is Pardes from the Ramak. Pardes from Moshe Cordovero as opposed to Eitz Chaim from the Arizal. The Kabbalah says is that there's an Ein Sof as the primary cause. Rambam calls it the Eloi Eloi is, you know, the cause of all causes.
First cause, yeah.
The first cause, yes, Matzeh Rishon.
Right.
Okay.
Or Ein Sof.
And we're going to call it the Ein Sof. Yes, that's the first one. Everybody knows that there's a final step in the creation process, and that's the physical world. This is the end. This is where it stops.
The buck stops here.
And there's an infinite number of levels and gradations of spiritual consciousness between us and the first cause, the infiniteness of Hashem. Okay, everybody agrees on that. The question is, how do you get from there to here? So Moshe Cordovero maintains that there was an infinite number of steps from the first cause, the infiniteness of Hashem, till you get to finally with the diminution of one after the other, finally it comes out here. Okay? That's the way Moshe Cordovero depicts it, the creation process. The Rizal raises a very fundamental question. Let's say what the purpose of a tzimtzum is that it cuts the amount of prevalent godliness in half. Okay, so how big is the first cause? It's infinite. And if you cut infinity in half, what are you left with?
Half of infinity.
Right.
Infinity.
Okay, and if you cut, therefore, according to the Rizal, if you cut infinity in half an infinite number of times,
it's still only infinite.
It's still going to be infinite. You're never going to get there. You're never going to get here from there. It's never going to happen. So therefore, he postulates...
Bridge to nowhere.
bridge from nowhere.
Exactly.
That's what this is, a bridge from nowhere.
From nowhere.
Yeah. So what the Rizal postulates is that there is something called the Tzimtzum HaRishon. The first step in the creation process is that Hashem removed his infiniteness, revealing his finiteness. That was the first step. And so now that there is only just a finite step, as step two, you might say, I don't know how many steps there are in between, but so now I've got this very large finiteness. How big is Hashem's finiteness? It's infinite. Okay, but it's still finite. And so since it's finite, you cut it in half, you've got half as much.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Okay? And you do that an infinite number of times, you come up here.
Yeah.
Come up with us, exactly. It says, but the process is such that this is going on at every step of the way, that you have these quantum leaps to get out of this infinity, because you have the problem, okay, so we've established a new level of infinity.
Right.
But you're still dealing with infinity, so you have to do another quantum leap. So with the Arizal, every step is really a Briya Yesh Ma'ayin, a creation of something from nothing.
Right.
So you finally come to this world, that this is the greatest creation of something. This is where you really have a something
from
coming from nothing.
Yeah.
Now going back to the idea of Hashem having a finiteness, how could you say Hashem has a finiteness? The answer is very simple. If you say that Hashem has no finiteness, then Hashem can't be infinite.
It's not Hashem, that's right.
Can't be infinite.
Right.
Because every infinite set contains every finite subset.
Correct.
So in order for there to be a creation, stay with me, Dave. No, go ahead. So in order for there to be the creation, so the divine will is hidden through the creation process. So you have to say, yes, Hashem wants this table to look like the way this table looks. But would you ever look at it and say, this is the way Hashem wants it? You can say, okay, fine, but it doesn't look that way. It's just the way it was made. Okay? So I've often said, and I'll say it again over here, that by the time that the godliness gets down to this world, it is so processed it resembles Velveeta cheese, which is
Neither cheese.
Neither cheese nor food. Exactly. It's not food because you could put it, you could leave it outside sitting on a shelf for years and the stuff would never rot.
But it is some of the finer plastics made.
Yes. I'm sure it must be something to do with polymers in there somewhere. Yes. Okay.
According to the sheep.
Right now. Okay, we'll take a quick break and come right back. All that is with the creation of the world. And what you wind up with is this diminution of godliness. Okay? It's still the will of Hashem because this is the way Hashem wants it to be, but you can go through your whole life through the mire of this world and never once ever think anything about godliness. Ma she'ein kein mitzvah, first one is mem shen alef kaf. Ma she'ein kein mitzvah she'ein pnimius ratzoni yisbarach, which is not the case when you're talking about the performance of the mitzvahs in this physical world. Ein sham hester panim klal. It's kind of hard to hide the godliness when you got tefillin on your body. It's the fact that you say that it's a dove or boilet, the word boilet means it sticks out. It's so obvious that what this person is doing, especially something like tefillin, which looks so weird, what's really going on over here with this thing? And the godliness permeates the tefillin, and when a person puts on the tefillin, the godliness of the tefillin permeates the individual.
Right.
And it has to have an effect, a physical effect, on the person and the world around them when they put on tefillin. It has to have an effect. How is it felt? That one I can't tell you. Sorry. But it does. And it all has to do with, for example, the expression, one of the accomplishments or one of the kavanas, the intentions of putting on tefillin, is that the brain rules the heart. Hamayach shalat al halev. The brain rules over the heart, meaning that a person has the ability of controlling their emotions. So putting on tefillin makes it that much more easy for a person to control their emotions. And that's because the godliness that's coming into the tefillin is not going through the creation process. It's bypassing the processing. So unlike the world, which is akin to Velveeta cheese, the tefillin is akin to whole milk.
Yes.
Limburger. Pardon the analogy.
The cream.
And the godliness, which is enlivening and bringing the tefillin and all the other mitzvahs into existence, never loses its connection to Hashem. It never becomes its own entity. But it remains united and incorporated in Hashem's will. And the tefillin, because they have this unity, because there was never a separation between the tefillin and Hashem, so that when a person puts on the tefillin, they're plugging into that unity. So that when a person is wearing tefillin or doing any other mitzvah, they are connecting themselves, uniting themselves, becoming incorporated in and losing their existence to the will of Hashem. When it comes to, say, for example, eating matzah the first night of Pesach, there's a mitzvah to eat matzah, kevzayas of matzah, the first night of Pesach.
Right.
So when a person is munching away, he said the bracha al achilas matzah, and then throws some matzah down his craw,
right,
and swallows it.
Right.
So that act of swallowing that matzah, which he's going, yum, this is delicious,
right, connects,
is incorporating him. He's losing his existence as a separate entity.
Right.
He has now taken on the status of being a mitzvah's matzah eater.
Yes.
This is like an ununderstandable paradox of the mitzvah itself remains completely connected to the infinite.
Correct. In the physical thing. You got this physical wheat. The wheat could be made into a donut. The wheat is, however, made into a piece of matzah.
Right.
There is not only not a mitzvah to eat matzah, a donut the first night of Pesach, there's an aveira involved with it.
Right.
A person who eats a donut the first night of Pesach intentionally gets karis, gets killed.
Yes. But he was saying.
But here it is that, yeah, it's a paradox because the same thing which is what's happened now is that by turning it into a mitzvah, you've redirected the life force going to it. So up until now, when it was just wheat and flour, so the vitality coming into this item is coming through klipas noga, which means it could be elevated, it could be not elevated. When a person now uses that matzah, because matzah you don't necessarily have to do a mitzvah for.
Right.
Matzah is only a mitzvah the first night by the Seder.
Right.
Person eats today a piece of matzah, for example, so it's the same like eating a donut.
Right.
But what happens now is when a person takes that piece of matzah, this doesn't even involve kavanas. It doesn't involve anything. It's the same. You got two pieces of matzah. One piece of matzah you eat the first night by the Seder. The second piece of matzah, which came from the same box, you eat during the day on Yontif. Well, Yontif already. You eat on Chol HaMoed. When there's no mitzvah to eat matzah. Okay? So that, if a person ate it gluttonously, would descend into the realms of impurity. Mm. Into Klippa. Mm-hmm. But here, the first night of Pesach, the guy doesn't have to think a thing. He could just be sitting there in front of the television, munching away. Instead of munching on pretzels, he's munching on matzah the first night of Pesach.
Right.
He is incorporated and nullified. It loses his existence as a separate entity and becomes part and parcel and nullified to the will of Hashem.
Right.
That's the power that mitzvahs have.
He's going to explain how this is possible. It's not a logical paradox that something.
Yeah, sure. We got four chapters worth of him explaining this, how this works.
That I missed from
30. Before? No. 35, 36, 37, 38, 39.
Okay.
You know, he talks all about the power of the mitzvahs and how it is that they're able to be what they are.
Sounds good.
V'hine, inyan hasharas hashchina hu gilei elokusa yisbarach. When it says that this is going to cause a revelation of the divine presence, what is that? That means that there's revealed godliness. V'orein soif be'ezed davar, and the infinite of Hashem is manifest in something. The high element meaning to say she'oiser davar nichlo be'or Hashem u'batol loy b'mitzios legamrei. That means to say that thing becomes incorporated in the light of Hashem and nullified it and loses its existence as a separate entity. Because now what is it doing? It's conveying Hashem. He said back in chapter 20 that the definition, no, chapter 19, that the definition of something which is holy is that it's nullified to Hashem. And he defines holiness is in chapter 6 as that which is nullified to Hashem is able to purvey godliness. Mm-hmm. That's something which is called holy. So this thing that he is utilizing, this physical thing, because it's an expression of the inner will of Hashem. That's the key word over here, David. It's an expression of the inner will of Hashem.
That's right.
Hashem wants there to be mitzvahs done in a physical world. So what's the important thing here? It's not the physical world. The important thing is the mitzvah.
The mitzvahs.
But you can't do mitzvahs in a physical world unless you have a physical world.
Right. You can't do mitzvahs in any other world. They only exist
right,
here.
Exactly. So the physical world,
therefore, becomes
absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
And Hashem wants it here. But Hashem didn't create the world for the world to exist. So Hashem created the world as a medium.
It's a means to an end.
For which the mitzvahs can be done.
Right.
So world is an external expression of divine will. Okay, I want to have it, so I'll have it.
It's a chariot.
The real reason behind the creation of the world is the mitzvah thing itself. Okay. But he says, anything which poses an obstacle, is an opposition, is not nullified to Hashem. and is saying, no, I do exist. Ein Oder Shem Shorim is Galabai. This saying, I do exist, repels godliness. Hashem can only be conveyed on things which allow it to be conveyed. There was a Polish rabbi by the name of Meir Premishlam, whose father was a bit of a rabbi, but Meir Premishlam was a very great rabbi in Poland. And even as a young man, as a kid, he was recognized as being prodigal. So the older Hasidim would say, oh, here comes a little genius, let's ask him a question, have fun with the guy. So his name was, they called him Meryl. Meir, little Meir.
Yeah.
Meryl, wo ist der Eberster? Meir, where's God?
Right.
And his response as a 10-year-old to these jibing older Hasidim was, we molest him, Arayn, where we let him in.
That's right.
Wherever you let God in, that's where you find him. But anything that's in opposing opposition and says, no, I don't want, God says, fine, I'm not forcing the issue. Doesn't want me here, I'm out, I'm gone. Yeah. I'll go find someplace else to be. Va'af tzadik gomer, and even a totally righteous person, shenis davik bay ba'ava rabba. Well, before he said ava b'taynugim, which is ava rabba is a lower level of, he's talking about these different levels of love and, chapters 42, 43, 44.
Okay.
So, this tzaddik who cleaves to Hashem with a great love, which means that he essentially is connected to Hashem. Hari leis makshava tefisa beklal. Why is he connected to Hashem? Is because he sat and he thought about it. He's thinking about the greatness of Hashem. He's thinking about the essential connection that he has with Hashem. And that, he talks about later in, I think it's 44, 43, that causes this person to have this tremendous feeling of love for Hashem. How much is this person thinking, though? How much can this person think about? Even the greatest tzaddik, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu spent 120 days on Har Sinai talking to God. And when all was said and done, what did he say? Hareini na es kivaydecha. You know, I never got a good look at you. If you don't mind, I'd like to see something.
If you don't mind, yes.
And what did Hashem do? Hashem showed in the back of his head by his tefillin, the knot of his tefillin shel rosh. He says, "Not even going to see my face." No one can see my face.
That's right.
So I'll show you the back. So why did Moshe want to do that? Because Moshe was so in love with Hashem. He wanted to experience Hashem.
He wouldn't see him.
But that's not the way we do it. Because there's Moshe, and Moshe's saying, I want.
Yeah.
So as much as he could get was only as much as he could withstand.
Yeah.
And there was a whole, forget about what was left after that. We talk about the different worlds. You talk about the world of Isiyah and the world of action, the world of formation, the world of creation, the world of emanation. You have Atzilus over there, and you have the different levels in Atzilus, from Malchus all the way up to Chachma, up to wisdom. And we define that wisdom wisdom is this infinite point that contains the infiniteness of Hashem. So this sounds pretty highfalutin over there. It says, I'm not sure where the quote is, but it's quoted in Tanya, it's quoted elsewhere, that there are levels of incomparability. Greater is the level of incomparability between the infiniteness of Hashem and Chachma of Atzilus, which is the highest level of creation, than there is between Chachma of Atzilus and this physical world. In other words, we are closer to Chachma of Atzilus than Chachma of Atzilus is closer to the infiniteness of Hashem. And all for a very simple reason. It's because what's Chachma of Atzilus of, after all?
It's a creation.
It's an expression of Hashem.
Right. So according to the Ramak and the...
According to everybody. According to everybody.
Yeah, it's a creation. But according to the Arizal, it's possible because there's some kind of like huge step from...
Right. And with the Arizal, with the Ramak also would be because the creation process starts officially with Chachma of Atzilus. That's already, you're in the creation system. Once you get to Chachma Vitzilus, you're now in the system. Right. When you're before, the step before Chachma Vitzilus is already out of the creation system. Okay, and there's no way comparable a creation system to before a creation system, and the step before that, 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 going back ad infinitum. So the incomparability between Chachma of Atzilus, wisdom of emanation, and the infiniteness of Hashem is incomparably greater than the difference between this world and the realm of Chachma of Atzilus. Okay, think about that, but not while driving.
Yes. I'm not thinking.
So that's why it is when a tzaddik is doing whatever he's doing, and he's doing a great job at it, and he's serving Hashem with love and with fear, palpable love and fear. But until he puts on the tefillin, he's not incorporated in Hashem. You could ask the question, who accomplishes more by putting on tefillin, us or Moses?
Mathematically, it's about equal. Cause
yeah, it'd be about the same as far as accomplishments are concerned. Because Moshe's tefillin, am I tefillin? I'm assuming that my tefillin, maybe I got Alter Rebbe's. Maybe I'm doing more because I don't know if Moshe Rabbeinu wore Alter Rebbe's tefillin.
Right.
You know, so so the but. who left a greater impression because of his kavanas? Without a doubt, Moshe had greater kavana putting on tefillin than I did.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because when I'm talking about a physical pair of tefillin, if the tefillin are kosher, they work.
Yeah, that's it.
And there's that level of incorporation of bringing godliness into the world is done exactly the same way. It's the physical act.
Right, right. It's the doing of it.
I think we mentioned it here. A person's walking down, say, Fifth Avenue. Minding his own business. Okay? Suddenly, a person who is taking off their tefillin his tefillin fly out of his hands and fly out the window. Okay? And this guy just happens at that second to be picking up his arm to stretch a little bit, and the tefillin, because they've been coming corkscrewing down from the 120th floor, they land on his arm and continue corkscrewing, and the tefillin shalrosh lands specifically right on his head, okay, without killing him, okay? So this guy doesn't know what hit him, quite literally.
Indeed, yes.
And he's doing the mitzvah of tefillin. Because he has the tefillin on. Does he have the tefillin on? Are they wrapped up? They're doing it the right way? He had no intention of putting on tefillin. He just happened to stick out his arm. Voila, he put on tefillin. What happened? He is now incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem. So now imagine what happens if a person put a little thought behind it.
Indeed.
And said, before he puts on his tefillin tomorrow morning,
maybe I'll put on my tefillin.
I'm going to put on my tefillin in order to achieve something.
Maybe
what am I going to achieve? I'm going to try to bring down more godliness into the world and be incorporated into godliness, thus making the world a better place.
Yeah.
Okay, it happens regardless if you're thinking about it or not. So you might as well be thinking about it.
Can't hurt.
For sure not. Okay. But if it's going to be happening anyway, you might as well at least be participant in it.
You know, why not?
Why let things happen because of what you're doing without you even knowing about it? There's no point going through life in the dark.
Yeah. Especially when there's a light to it.
Especially, yes. And you're turning the light on. It's more like you turned the light on, but you closed your eyes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to benefit from the light.
Yeah.
No, think about it a bit, will you?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's what he says, because Leismach Shabbat Tafisa Beklal. Just by sitting and thinking about it, it's not going to happen. Even for the Tzaddik Gomer, who has developed this love because he sat and thought about it. But whatever he's been able to sit and think about is only comparable to what his intellect is. It's all dependent. His love is based on his IQ. And how big of an IQ is there? 200 doesn't sound like a very big number when you're talking about numbers generally.
Yeah, so in the end, what difference does it make anyway?
For sure. Okay, as long as he's got an IQ of infinity minus one.
There you go. Yeah, it's somewhat limited.
Yeah. Ki amitis Hashem Elokim emes hu yachta yechuda ve'achduso shehu levadehu ve'efes belade mamish. Because this is very profound over here. The truth is, okay, when in the elevator we use the word truth means it's unending.
Right.
That's the definition of true. It is constant, consistent, without
forever.
End or interruption.
Right.
The truth is that Hashem is true. Elohim is emes, and this is it's oneness and unity that this person has, that he alone is, and there's nothing besides him mamish. So that's why it is that when a person does a mitzvah, it's eternal. Okay, we have the famous story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was in the Haggadah. And in the Haggadah he says, Hareini ani keben shivim shana v'lo zechisi, etc. I'm like a 70-year-old.
Right.
Okay. What's the story? Why does he say I'm like a 70-year-old? Is there was a whole coup in the yeshiva, and they kicked out the old administration. They appointed him head. And he was 18 years old. And so he goes home, and he tells his wife, they made me the head of the yeshiva. And she says, it's not going to work. You don't have a gray beard. People aren't going to respect you. What happened? He went to sleep. He was so worried, he woke up the next day with a gray beard. Okay? It says a miracle happened. Not that it wasn't his wife that gave him the gray hair. Okay? And being it that he was 18 years old, he probably didn't have a whole lot of kids to give him gray hair yet either. Okay? So you ask the question is why does he say that he's like a 70-year-old? And if he's 18 years old, why doesn't he say I'm like a 55-year-old? It's also when I was 18, so a 50-year-old was an old man.
Indeed.
Okay? Now that I'm in my 50s, so 70 doesn't seem so old anymore.
Right.
Okay, so why does he say he's like a 70-year-old? And the answer that is given from the Kabbalah is that he was a reincarnation of Shmuel HaNavi, who Shmuel lived to be 52. So 52 and 18 is 70. So Rabbi asks the question, so what? Is this Jewish trivia?
Chas
v'shalom over here? They say something like this, a trivia.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
So the Rebbe answers, this is like one of the first sikhas about Pesach. The Rebbe answers that most of us are probably reincarnated. We've been here before. So if we've been here before, there's a reason why we're here now. What's the reason why we're here now? It's because we messed up in the previous lifetimes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. We didn't finish it last time.
We're only here again because we didn't do what we did supposed to do till now.
Yeah, you didn't finish it all.
So what's the problem? So that must mean
what to do.
So what do we have left to do? We have left to do the things that our souls are given as a job, minus the things that we've already accomplished. If there are mitzvahs that we did in previous lifetimes that we fulfilled and completed, we don't have to do those mitzvahs. And very often then we're not given that opportunity to do those mitzvahs. One of the reasons why it could be, I'm not saying this is why it absolutely is, why is it that you have a couple that's childless? Is because they don't need to do that mitzvah this time around. They did it in a previous lifetime. They fulfilled that mitzvah already. Hashem wants them to do other things this time. So they did the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are accumulative. And it could very well be that a person came back because he did 612 mitzvahs. So what if he has make our lives a little easier and just give us a list? What would it be if you were told you only had one mitzvah due in your life? What would be your result from that knowledge?
You do the one mitzvah?
You do that one mitzvah.
And you'd be done.
That would be it. And then you wouldn't worry about anything else. Oh, it's Phil, and I did that in a previous lifetime.
Right.
You know,
right.
Since I did that previously. Yeah. Kosher, I did that previously. Yeah. I'm just doing this one mitzvah, and I'm out of here. I'm done.
Right.
I'm going to enjoy the rest of my life.
Right.
So we don't know what mitzvah it is that we have to do.
Right.
So he says, but wait a minute. If the guy is coming back, that means that he must have done things wrong in previous lifetimes too. So aren't those things there? Oh, so we'll go back up. So the Rebbe says that the power of the previous lifetimes accumulated gives the person strength to get through the next lifetime. So now we could ask the question, but wait a minute, the person did things wrong. So maybe those things that he did wrong are holding him back from previous lifetimes.
Yeah, weigh him down.
Do I need to do a past life regression and find out what my sins were in my previous lifetime to rectify them now? And the answer is no. Mitzvahs are accumulative. They are eternal, which is why I'm telling you this whole story.
Right.
They are eternal. When a person does a mitzvah, regardless of what they do afterwards, the mitzvah is a mitzvah.
Right.
The bad things that a person does are corrected with their death. Those don't carry through to the next lifetime to hold them back. But a mitzvah that a person does, it's a stand out at Farmer Jack over here, 10 Mile in Coolidge on Friday sometimes, and hand out candles to ladies. Lady, would you like to? The lady says to me that why should she take a candle Friday night? She said she watches television. In case she doesn't bring the Shabbos into her house, it would be hypocritical for her to light Shabbos candles. So I told her she should take the, this is when before the advent of flat screen televisions, that one day I'm going to tell a person a story and they're going to look at me, it looks like so strange. How do you put something on top of the television? It's only 3/4 of an inch wide.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Small candles.
Yeah, so I told her, take the candles and put them on top of the television and have them burn while you're watching the TV.
Right.
Because this is a mitzvah for a woman to light Shabbos candles on Friday night?
Right.
Absolutely, 100%. And when she does, anything she does after that in no way takes away from the fact that she did light Shabbos candles.
Right.
Even if she's really in Machol Shabbos immediately, she still did the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. You can't take it away.
Right.
Okay, so that's what happens is that this is when by doing the mitzvahs they're tapping into the emes of Hashem. We are going to stop here. We got up to page 160, and it's right before the note.
Right before the note. Yeah. Good.